All right, so I'm happy to present our next speaker, John Lam, and I guess you're gonna show us that our studio is not the only editor in town.
Only game,
The only game, yeah.
yeah.
So you're presenting a lap around our tools for Visual Studio.
That's right.
Great.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name's John. Me and my friends at Microsoft, about five of them, have been working for about the last 5 years, creating this thing that I'm about to show you. Some of you may have seen. How many people have actually tried our tools for Visual Studio yet? It's okay. Yeah, awesome. All the RStudio guys are waving their hands. The first thing I want to kind of talk about is the why, right? Because some people say, RStudio is awesome. We think RStudio is awesome. We think that the things that they've done for the community are awesome. So many of the things that I'm going to show you today are really courtesy of the RStudio folks. Certainly things like R Markdown and Shiny and things that we do have working in RTVS are certainly due to all of the work that those guys have done. The reason why Microsoft had to create a set of our tools was really after we acquired Revolution last year, we went out and talked to customers, and almost the second or third question that came out of their mouths was, "So does this stuff work inside of Visual Studio?" Because that's what all our people know how to use, right? So inevitably, we had to go off and build some tooling for Visual Studio, and this is the kind of set of things that I want to show you here. Now, RTVS is an extension, so it builds on top of the stuff that we have in Visual Studio. This is why, me and five other guys, right, were able to build all of the stuff that I'm going to show you in less than a year. We're building on top of Visual Studio. We're about a 5-6 meg download on top of Visual Studio. You can run it on any edition of Visual Studio as well. If you want to run it on the community edition, which is free for students, for academics, for small companies, right, which are five or less people, or for personal use, right, if you want to just use it at home, all those things are fine, and you can go off and download the community edition, which is the same as Pro. All that's different is what the license says about the product, right? So lots of things you can do to get started. So that's it. No slides, nothing else. I'm just going to show you the product and kind of walk you through a set of features. So on the left-hand side, I've got an editor window. On the right-hand side, I've got an interactive window, right? We can type 3+3. So all of the kinds of REPL-y things that you would expect certainly work inside of RTVS as well. So if I come over here to the editor window and I start typing stuff, so you can see the set of things that you would expect, right? So we have, for example, we have the, hold on a second. We have IntelliSense that shows up as we start typing. So once I have that, I've got a dropdown. You can see here that inside of this thing, it's asking for a package. If I want to say, let's go get dplyr, we do completion across packages as well, right? So a lot of the kinds of things that you would expect in the typing experience, we certainly have inside of here as well. So if I hit Control-Enter will send the current line over to the REPL, much like you're used to in RStudio, and it will go off and execute the code. We have lots of other kind of interesting little bits of IntelliSense in here as well. So if I type read.csv and I hit the open paren, you can see that we pull a lot more help out of the help files as well to give you a summary of what the function does, what the parameter does as well. So you can see that the current parameter up there, which is file, sorry, it's kind of small, but the first thing is file. This is read.csv, and if I start typing stuff in here. So, for example, much like you've seen elsewhere, if I hit tab while I'm inside of a double quote, I can do a completion against the files inside of my local file system as well. So I can hit tab there to complete that. But when I hit comma, you'll see that the next parameter, in this case, is header, gets bold-faced inside of the IntelliSense, and the help for that shows up there as well, right? So lots and lots and lots of little things like that in the IntelliSense experience. If I type something else in here, like how about this? If I type read C, it completes, and there's something, and it's a slightly different icon there. This is an example of code snippets. So code snippets are a feature inside of Visual Studio, which allows you to kind of have templates for code that you type very, very often, right? So if I type read C in this case, and I hit tab twice, it goes off and types all of that stuff, right? And after it typed all that stuff, you can see that there's a bunch of fields in there as well. So the first field, the first yellow thing is highlighted, so I can type df there, and that replaces that. If I tab over to here, I can type in my airports.dat, right? And I can hit tab again. So there's a bunch of pre-programmed fields, and it's just faster for you to type things, right? When you can just sit there and go tab, 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 right? And go through a bunch of things. Now, these things are entirely user definable as well. There's all sorts of things that you can do to discover them. Now, one of the things that's kind of challenging is, well, how did you know to type read C, right? Like, that's the most kind of like non-discoverable thing ever. So if you go over here to the file menu, sorry, the edit menu under IntelliSense, there is this thing here called insert snippet, and there is a hotkey bound to it, which is control K, control X. If I just run this command, you'll now see that you can now explore all of the snippets through IntelliSense that are installed on the machine, right? So if I want to go look at that, this is a snippet for doing a bar graph, for example, right? So lots of little things you can customize, you can add your own, do a bunch of things in there as well to do that. Now, some other kind of fun things, if you start typing code in the thing, so let's just go assign a variable. So certainly there's lots of this kind of typing that I'm sure you're very used to doing. You can again use snippets to kind of simplify this as well. So instead of three keystrokes, I can hit equals and hit tab, and it'll do that kind of completion there for me as well. So lots of little, tiny little things like that, which kind of just make it an interesting experience. So I've got a couple of data frames. I've assigned them to local variables. One of the other things that we have is we've got a variable explorer here as well. So we have a tool menu up here, R tools, and I can come over here to Windows. And down there, we can see there's Variable Explorer there. I can bring that guy up. And inside of Variable Explorer, inside of the global environment, I haven't executed this stuff yet. So let's just go run that stuff so it shows up. I now have those two variables executed. Now lives inside of my global environment. I can walk up to one of these guys, and I can start drilling down into this thing as well. So as you can see here, I can also go arbitrarily deep into the structures as well. Because we've got a deep understanding of the objects. We spent a lot of time inside of the Variable Explorer, not just doing this, but optimizing performance and a few other things. If you hit this hourglass thing next to it, this will pop up a table view. So we've got a table view. It allows you to inspect this stuff. If you click on the column headings, it'll also allow you to sort, right? So I can sort descending and descending. If I hold down Shift, I can now, you know, do the breaking tie thing, right, to sort by this, then by this, then by this. So we have that there as well. If I want to open up a second window, I can do this now. And we have a whole bunch of these kind of window management features inside of Visual Studio, so I can kind of drag these tabs around, dock them in different places. If you have a second monitor attached to your PC as well, you can certainly drag those things and drag them off into the second monitor as well. So I do that a lot, right? I just kind of arrange windows in a bunch of different places, and they just stay where I left them. So that's pretty cool. Now, as you can see, we also have this other little thing here, where you've got this little funny green icon sitting next to the product as well. So if I click next to that, we took that data frame, and I've now gone off and exported that thing to Excel. And now that I have this thing in Excel, I can do all sorts of, like, you know, funky, cool Excel-y things like that, right, to show you some other visualizations. So when I showed this to a bunch of guys in finance in New York City, there was like, oh, well, crazy screening and stuff, right, because they certainly have a lot of, like, these were the data scientists I talked to, but they're the people that they produce things for kind of think in pivot tables and things like that, right? So giving them an easy way to kind of exporting this data out so that they can get them to the Excel users in a format that they like is something that they go, oh, this is awesome. So we have that. Let's see. Let's keep going. Let's go to show you some of the plotting stuff inside of the product. So let's shut this thing down, and let's just run some of this code here. Let's move this over to the left. So if I do a plot, I just kind of call this a GDI plot, but if I run this plot there, you can see that we can kind of do like kind of the standard plotting stuff inside of a tool window, and the plot gets generated inside of that. I can tear this guy off. I can put it in different places. I can maximize it. Every time we resize this, we also force a re-rendering event as well, so that we replot using all the available pixels, right, that that thing has, or that device has. So let me put that back over there. If I go a little bit further, let's just interactively plot something else. So let's go plot Iris next to it. So when I do that, we also have these kind of back and forward buttons here as well, right? So you can go kind of navigate back and forth through your plot history. You can save it out as a bitmap and a bunch of other things as well, if you want to export it to some other application. So we've got the plotting stuff. Oh yeah, so here's something we just recently added here as well. So as we go through this, let's just make sure we bring, oh, look at that. I have no package installed here, right? So I need to grab ggviz. So we also have another thing in here. Let's go bring up our tools and let's go to my windows. And we have this package explorer. And we'll make this a little bit bigger so you can see more of the UI. So in the package explorer, it shows me all the packages I have installed, all the ones that are available at whatever Cranmere that I'm currently pointing at right now, and all the ones that are loaded. So we have various kind of filtered views. When you see those little green dots next to the package name, that means that that package is being loaded into my current session that I'm running. So if I go over here, and we need to go grab ggviz, right, in this case, I can grab that. It'll tell me what the version number is next to it. It's a little icon there I can click on, and it's going to go off and download and install this thing. All right, so once that's there, I can come back to here and run that. Oh, no. Oh, no. Of course this is happening, right? The wireless is super flaky in this place. So maybe that's not going to work. That's what I get for deleting ggviz first, right, before showing it. So let's see what other things in my talk breaks as a result of this. Oh, it's trying. Oh, maybe I should have picked a smaller package to delete. So anyways, it's going, it's thinking, I'll keep talking. So let's switch over to something else. Certainly we also have support for R Markdown inside of here as well. So let me bring that over there. I can show you this stuff. We've got this very subtle, and probably on the screen it doesn't look all that great, but those things are actually kind of shaded a little bit, right? So you can kind of differentiate the R Markdown blocks a little bit differently. One of the new things that we recently added in this next release was that, oh my, okay, it's still thinking, that's good. So if I type read.csv, we now have a full IntelliSense experience inside of the R Markdown blocks, inside of the R code blocks inside of a R Markdown document as well. Right, so this allows me to kind of like, the kind of trick that we have here is we have IntelliSense both for the Markdown stuff, and we also have IntelliSense for R code sitting inside of there, so we're kind of stitching two different kinds of editors inside of the same buffer. And we were able to get that up and running and working in this release. So all the usual things you would expect, I can go select code inside of here and go run it in the REPL, but of course the REPL is, oh, it finished installing, awesome. Okay, so let's go back to the thing I was showing you earlier. Inside of the plots, let's go back to here. So let's load ggviz. I think ggviz loaded, but let's run it again. And let's run this plot. And ggviz will pop in the default browser. So right now, what we always do is we pop the default browser with the generate HTML. There's another option that asks it to open inside of a tool window, but for a variety of reasons, that's probably not the best way for you to render a lot of the content. I personally prefer the external browser thing because I can all tap back and forth between the two things very easily. Okay, so let's keep going. Oh yeah, so moving up back to the top here, we now also implemented regions. So regions are a feature which is some people call code folding as well inside the editor. So if I walk up to this line 10 and I hit Control M twice, I've now collapsed and I can collapse and expand regions inside of the document. These regions are all named, right? So you can see what the name is based on what's sitting up there at the comment so that you can open and close those regions as well. So let's talk a little bit about getting help on things. So let's say that again, right, I wanted to get help for read CSV. So if I type ?read CSV, not surprisingly, we have our help window. We format it, we do a little bit of CSS styling against this thing to kind of make the fonts look a little bit more modern over here as well. We also have an option which will allow you to kind of take that same thing and pop it in an external browser, right? So again, you have that option about whether or not you want to alt tab back and forth between your help and things like that as well. Now, another cool thing that we have that we recently added was if I type read CSV, let's type it in the editor. And I was curious about, like, you know, I want to find usages of read CSV because I have no idea how to call this function. One thing I can do is I can just position the cursor over here and I can hit F1. And when I hit F1 in this place, what it does now is it redirects and gives you, it does a search in your favorite search engine. And in this case, it scoped all of the result sets to look only at Stack Overflow, right? But since I was here yesterday and listening to a talk, I learned about this other really awesome thing where there's this CRAN mirror, right, that lives inside of GitHub. So here's the parameter, the F1 web search string. So instead of saying stackoverflow.com here, I can now say github.com/CRAN, right? And now when I re-execute this same thing, right, let's go over that. Where did I go before? It was over here, right? And I press F1. Now my search results are all finding usages of things in actual code, right? So lots of kind of fun things, but it's a really simple thing, but now you can just hit F1, right, to get help on things inside of the product. Oh my God, I'm almost out of time. Okay, let me skip to the big finale. So yeah, there's markdown stuff. I showed you that. You can edit it, it generates an HTML page. Awesome. But let me show you the really cool thing. If I go to server, and I scroll down a little bit in server here. Let's run this. What this is this is a Shiny app, and let me show you running. So there, it goes off. It's a little airport browser, allows me to like browse things, you know, airports in the United Kingdom. I can dynamically filter based on, you know, the number of departures in an airport. We also saw that scary red text, right, that showed up in here just before. But because I attended Joe's session, I now know how to fix the scary red text inside of the Shiny app. And you can see there's a scary stack trace and a few other things inside of there as well. Now, let's stop running right now. And what I want to do is come back here. And let's drop a breakpoint in there. Let's attach a debugger. And let's go and rerun the Shiny application. So now during this kind of initialization thing, boom, I drop into the debugger. And look, input departures is null. I can do all the kind of funky things I can do, like I can pin that watch expression and I can scroll up and down. I have a locals window where I can go off and inspect the objects and the details, what they have in there. I have a call stack down below where I can go up and down and navigate between different stack frames as well. So all that kind of stuff exists, and I can hit F5 to continue execution, of course. It's going to hit this again, and one more time, and off we go, right back out into the application as we're running. Now, if I wanted to fix this, I can certainly go off and do this, and let's quickly go off and fix the bug here, right? So I can now say, I now require input dollar country, right, which was one of the null values that I saw there. I can save this, go back over here, and since this is a GitHub project, I can right click and I can go commit. I can take server, stage it, click on the plus button, right? Yes, I want to save a lot of other stuff. And I say fixed bug and hit enter, commit the stage changes, sync them back up to GitHub at the top. And if I quickly navigate over to here, where am I? I should see when I hit F5 and if the network works and a bunch of other things. Fix bug, right? So that showed up inside of GitHub as well, right? So a lot of the kind of fun things that we have in here, like the GitHub extension was actually written by GitHub themselves inside of Visual Studio. I used Vim the entire time and Vim key bindings. All that stuff just worked, right? Because that was another extension that I had inside of Visual Studio. So there's a lot of kind of funky things that kind of show up in the ecosystem for free as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we have time for one quick question while we welcome up our next speaker.
Sure.
Question up the front. There's no mic. Just shout in. So the question was, is there any scheduling support for scheduling R scripts to run? That's a fantastic question. You gave that talk. You're the EA guy, right? Yes, I need to talk to you, right? We have all sorts of things planned for things to solve that particular problem. Yeah. Great. Thanks again. See ya.